The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. Listeners, as always, thank you for joining us. Just wonderful to have you with us. And remember again, please spread the word about our podcasting so that we can get this, all the incredible information that we're able to bring to you, spread it far and wide around. So we are, as I keep telling you all, we are seeing a huge uptick in our podcasting, which means that the word about our mission is getting out wider and wider. So please, let's keep doing that. Our guest right now is Chris Faddis, and I'm going to be talking a little bit more. I'm going to actually just start off with sort of set up the questions here so that we can talk to Chris. Chris is a regular guest on the show. Thank you to Solidarity HealthShare, of whom he is the co-founder and CEO of the HealthShare organization. And we've had a wonderful relationship with Solidarity and hope that we can continue with that. And of course, we are always very honored when we have an organization such as Solidarity HealthShare to notice who we are and to stand beside us. So without further ado, Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Molly. It's great to talk to you again.
You know, the Supreme Court is again weighing in onto the abortion controversy. The High Court has temporarily blocked lower court orders that would have limited access to the abortion drug mifepristone. And of course, we all know that that is what most of the abortions now, certainly in Ohio, more than 50% of abortions take place as a result of using chemical abortions. So the court is for now preserving the pill's availability while justices weigh the Biden administration's emergency request to leave the current FDA approval in place. According to the Wall Street Journal, anti-abortion plaintiffs are challenging the FDA's 2000 approval of mifepristone and other policies that relax the stringent conditions for the drug's distributions. There are major concerns over the side effects of chemical abortion drugs. So, Chris, you are here today to talk with us about what does this mean? Mifepristone is the latest aftershock of the Supreme Court's 2022 decision, rescinding abortion rights in overturning Roe v. Wade, where the Supreme Court rightfully found that the authority to regulate abortion must be returned to the state. What did the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals attempt to do in this ruling? Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, you know, essentially what they did is, first off, they fully, in that Fifth Circuit decision, so roll back the access to mifepristone, which limited use to women for pregnant for 7 weeks or fewer weeks. And that, you know, was the original approval for mifepristone, was up to 7 weeks or fewer. And through the sort of COVID regulation changes and all these emergency authority that the federal government had, they extended that out to 10 weeks, including interstate, abortion access as well, and being able to ship the prescriptions, mail them. The federal government even challenged, and several states made the case they were going to let the drugs be shipped into states that abortion was illegal. What the Fifth Circuit did is they actually rolled it back to the original FDA approval. So 7 weeks, it is not allowed for, also not allowing for interstate, to be mailed and all of that. But the Supreme Court gave a stay on that. Well, they gave the government the chance to appeal, and that's a normal action. That's not surprising. But essentially, what we have right now is finally the most substantial challenge to the flawed FDA approval of mifepristone from all the way back to 2000. Mm-hmm. And there's a really good shot here. particularly because the FDA's approval was flawed, because there was a lot of scientific issues, a lot of, you know, doctors have had issues with it, and because there are so many complications that are ignored. There's a good opportunity here that perhaps the court will see in the favor of the plaintiffs, which is the Alliance of Hippocratic Medicine, which is a fantastic organization of doctors who filed this lawsuit.
Will if we are successful in getting the Supreme Court to agree that the Biden administration has overstepped the mark here, would there be a possibility that it would be banned altogether, or are we just going to go back to the 7 weeks?
Well, you know, the initial court ruling out of Texas was a complete ban and a complete rollback to pre-2000, which was that mifepristone was not allowed for usage. The Fifth Circuit, you know, reinstated the original approval of the FDA. And so the Supreme Court now has to decide not only if they're going to uphold the Fifth Circuit's rolling back to 7 weeks, but if they're going to uphold the original decision of completely banning mifepristone. So there is a possibility that this could become a complete and total ban. And, you know, as you and I are talking, you know, we're anxiously awaiting it. It's very possible we'll have a decision in the coming day or two, right? And so we're waiting to see what the court will decide. But, the lawsuit was brought particularly because of concerns about how it was approved. It was filed in November by a group of doctors with the Alliance of Hippocratic Medicine. And they're alleging that the FDA's approval of mifepristone was flawed and puts women at risk due to unresearched complications. And now we have 23 years of data to prove those complications, right? And so there's a lot to say here that, you know, perhaps, and I don't know how often this happens, that a court could challenge an FDA approval. But we are seeing, you know, political means to get FDA approvals happening all over the place, right? So I think this is an important check and balance here, that if we don't feel that the FDA is doing their job to protect the public, for doctors to come out and say, look, we've seen the complications, we've seen the proof that the complications are there, and that the FDA didn't do their job in protecting the public, the court could absolutely, completely rule in favor of banning the drug. And you know, certainly the FDA could go back to the drawing board, but at least it would be banned for now.
Yeah, this would be a huge positive for all of us. What your organization is very much focused on upholding moral teaching of the Catholic Church. I know you and I have talked about chemical abortions before. We've talked about the fact that the Biden administration, the Obama administration as well, also tried to push the Catholic hospitals into issuing these and providing these chemical abortions and doing things like this and providing contraception, all that kind of stuff. Do you see that the Catholic Church might get involved in this as well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know exactly where the church would have grounds for this, you know, this suit, but I know they're certainly supportive. Obviously, I think most of our bishops and the, you know, the church in general is supportive. You know, this lawsuit is specifically being brought by doctors because of the complications and the lack of research founded, right? So, you know, but I wouldn't be surprised. And you know, ultimately what the government's trying to do right now is enforce this usage of mifepristone across the country, you know, including states who by their own state rights, right, have banned abortion. They're trying to get these abortion pills into those states. And so I think, you know, they're not going to stop fighting for that. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't try to enforce something. You know, one thing we're seeing, Molly, is, you know, in Colorado, right? Colorado just had the first state law banning the abortion pill reversal, right? Which basically says, hey, if a woman takes the abortion pill protocol, the mifepristone, which is a two-part medication that you take over a couple of days. If a woman during that time in between says, wait a minute, what am I doing? I want to have this baby. You know, the abortion pill reversal, which was developed by heroes of mine like Dr. George Delgado and others, allows for a really evidence-based way to reverse the effect of the drug. One of the first things that mifepristone does is it restricts the progesterone available to the baby. And so they give them, you know, progesterone and some other things, and it helps to reverse the abortion pill. The state of Colorado just issued a law banning abortion pill reversal. right?
Wow.
So we know that the agenda here is going to continue to drive towards this. Now, one clinic in Colorado, a wonderful, you know, clinic, Bella Natural Women's Center, Bella has filed a lawsuit against that law, and it already got an injunction, at least for a time, on that law. So that's good. But we know this is going to keep coming. So I wouldn't be surprised if the church doesn't have to stand up and fight on this matter.
Yeah, absolutely. At least, submit amicus briefs, et cetera, and do, you know, really get involved in this, because it's going to be very, very interesting to watch it. And as you say, we are, as, perhaps even before we are able to air this particular interview with you, Chris, there may be a decision that's come down from the court. So, but we will wait for that. And then, of course, there'll be other things that there'll be a repercussion that'll go on and on and on. So we will be following this on a regular basis just to see where we're all at. And of course, what the bottom line is, we have to stop these chemical abortions, because certainly in Ohio, abortion we're hoping that the heartbeat bill will take effect very shortly, and that we will be able to defeat our ballot initiative here, the pro-abortion ballot initiative, ACLU driving it behind it to make abortion legal, not illegal, but legal up until the moment of birth. So we're hoping that all of this is going to really resonate here in Ohio. Mifepristone is the aftershock of as we said, of Roe v. Wade. But when we see organizations like so many different institutions, and Charlotte Lozier Institute, which advises pro-life organizations with medical research, they are saying that they've got evidence, Chris. They've got evidence of widespread use of the abortion pill over the past 20 years. They've also shown that there is a lot of evidence as well of complications. Isn't this right? I mean, the complications of this pill is just unbelievable.
Yeah. In fact, this is something that's very interesting, because this data that Charlotte Lozier and other groups have put together is with knowing the fact that complications of the abortion pill are wildly underreported. There are many instances of emergency room visits that are on record where people have had complications that are not being reported to the reporting site by the FDA, which is one of the measures we have as consumers to be able to report issues. And anyone can do it, but it's normally done, by a doctor or hospital, right? And even with that underreporting, this data shows that there is a real issue here. And so, there's been no randomized trials investigating the mid to longer term complications of mifepristone. This is coming from Charlotte Lozier. The FDA has shown its lack of interest in complications. Under its revised regulation, the manufacturer only needs to report any deaths brought to their attention. So on almost any other drug you can imagine, they have to report all adverse events, right, at certain levels, right? Not headaches and cramping, right? But anything that requires, medical attention. But on mifepristone, they only have to report deaths. And the FDA's, continued. The later abortions involve higher complication rates. They've decided no longer had any interest in tracking those complications, right? And research shows the physical risks are significant. It's the study of abortions in Finland. 20%, Molly, of women undergoing mifepristone-induced abortions experience adverse events, including 50% hemorrhage, 6% surgical intervention, and 9 deaths per 100,000, right? This is a number that has taken other medical interventions off the market. 9 deaths in 100,000. And we are going to not even report this? I mean, this is a real issue, Another study from All Medicaid-Funded Abortions from 1999 to 2015, so this is a very wide, a wide swath of Medicaid-funded abortions, revealed that 35% of women undergoing mifepristone-induced abortion required emergency room treatment within 30 days of their abortion. So for this to not even be something that the FDA takes a look at, to not even have hearings, to not even have, require further testing, to not even put a pause on the medication. If you remember with, even with the COVID vaccinations, we had questions about how the oversight of that.
Kidding. Yeah.
When there was an increase in heart conditions and things, what happened? The FDA put Johnson & Johnson on hold, right? Yeah. These things are supposed to happen. That is why they are there, to regulate, these drug manufacturers. And we're only reporting deaths. And yet you just heard the level of complications, the level of hemorrhaging. 15% of women in Finland doing mifepristone hemorrhage. And that's not a reported event at our FDA.
This is absolutely atrocious, Chris. And, you know, this is why I think I was just reading to just before we came on the air, first we started interviewing here, about the fact that the trust in the medical institutions and medical systems has just plummeted from the general population. And I'm not surprised when you look at this kind of stuff happening. I mean, we've come through the COVID thing where we were seeing all kinds of, you know, silliness going on with regards to reporting and all that kind of stuff. And then you hear this, that's going the way they are, just not even reporting the fact that you're going into the hospital. Goodness gracious me. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. You know, another controversial topic involves the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops' recent new guidelines for Catholic hospitals when providing gender transition care. You know, you mentioned earlier on Colorado. I just read today about the fact that Colorado has sort of opened up three laws that allows Colorado to be used almost like as a tourism state for transgender surgeries. I mean, this is unbelievable. But the 14-page doctrinal note titled Moral Limits to the Technological Manipulation of the Human Body by the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops sets guidelines for changing a person's sex, specifically among young people. The document says Catholic hospitals must not perform interventions, whether surgical or chemical, that aim to transform the sexual characteristics of a human body into those of the opposite sex, or to take part in the development of such procedures. What does this mean for Catholic healthcare?
Well, you know, the statement's been very significant, Molly, and important. I think it was important for the bishops to remind the hospitals, because I think a lot of people were wondering, what are they going to do? I mean, because, you know, this is a moment of truth in a sense, right? If the Biden administration is successful in enforcing these rules, this is a moment where folks have to make a decision. What line am I going to be on? Am I going to keep my business? Am I going to keep my hospital but take away the Catholicity? Or am I going to practice the way that I'm called to practice and do, you know, do the thing, the heroic thing I'm going to need to do? And the bishops made it clear that that Catholic healthcare is not in any way to give in to these Biden measures. And so, you know, essentially, the largest group of Catholic health hospitals is the Catholic Health Association, which has 600 hospitals, 600 long-term and other 1,600 long-term and other healthcare facilities. You know, more than one in seven U.S. hospital patients is cared for in a Catholic facility. So this is a big deal. This is a moment of truth. Are we going to continue offering Catholic healthcare? And the bishops have made it clear. It wasn't clear, but they've reminded us, right? This is what Catholic healthcare is. Certainly, does that mean that somebody who comes in the door with transgender, whatever, that says they're transgender, that identifies that way, whatever it is, that we don't treat them? Of course we treat them, but we will not do these life-altering procedures. We will not participate in these hormone therapies and all of these other things that are harming their long-term health and actually causing more mental health issues down the long run. So this is a big deal. It's going to come to a head, I'm sure, in the courts before anything. The question will be, how many of the Catholic, and not just Catholic hospitals, Christian hospitals will have to make this decision as well. How many of these hospitals will maintain their Catholic or Christian ethos, their identity, serve people from a Catholic anthropology, or in how many of them will decide, you know what, we're going to go ahead and lose the Catholic designation so we can continue serving, and keep our business, keep our profit, keep whatever, right? So it'll be interesting to see, Molly. This is a big deal, and it was a very important announcement from the bishops to clarify. Now, the other side of this will be, will the bishops, will they hold the Catholic hospitals to this, right?
Exactly.
So should a hospital choose to allow these things to happen, or try to maybe hide that they're allowing these things to happen in their ORs, will a bishop have the courage of our Bishop Emeritus here in Phoenix, a Bishop Olmsted, and actually strip the Catholic identity of those hospitals? That'll be the interesting part. You know, I work closely with the Catholic Medical Association and Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine and the Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs. We are all fighting for this, that we are going to hold true. And so we hope the Catholic Health Association and those hospitals will follow suit.
It's interesting. I had a guest on just a week or so ago, a woman who was used a pseudonym, and her name, we used Lily for her name because she's been threatened by all kinds of, because of this whole transgender thing, and she's been fighting back against, she and a whole group of other parents are fighting back against the transgender mutilation that's going on here in Ohio. And she actually mentioned the fact that, you know, Rainbow Children Unite, Cleveland Clinic, Rainbow Children's University Hospitals here in our area, the Cincinnati Children's Hospital, all of these big hospitals are all participating in this, yes, in this transgender nonsense that's going on. And the reason being, Chris, is because there is so much money in it. There's so much money in it.
Yes. There's a lot of money in it. There's a lot of donor money in it as well. There's a lot, you know, a lot of these massive liberal organizations that are funding, you know, projects based on the availability of these services. You know, we're starting to see that in, you know, the whole diversity, equity, inclusion policies that people have to have in order to get funding, in order to get, you know, grants and all those kind of things. So it is, the pressure is huge for these organizations. Mm-hmm. And those that are, you know, sort of, let's just call them amoral, you know, mm-hmm. they're neither here nor there, they're corporate hospitals. They're essentially choosing what they would choose. They're serving their shareholders. We could make more money. We're going to get more funding, right? We're going to do those things. But Catholic hospitals have a different call, you know, mm-hmm. and certainly not that they shouldn't make money. They need to be sustainable. But they do have a different call. And so we need to really pray for them, pray for the doctors. You know, one of the struggles they're going to have is not every doctor in a Catholic hospital is of like mind, right? They're employing thousands of people and, you know, most of the time they're not necessarily on the same page. So, you know, it may be difficult for these hospitals to staff, right, if they've got doctors who object to them not providing these services. Exactly. So it's going to be a fight. This is the battle we kind of knew was coming. And we need to pray big time for this model.
Absolutely. So we've got about 3 minutes left. Tell us about Solidarity Health Share. I always like to end off on that because this, of course, is the most amazing way to use our health, to fund for our health.
Yeah. You know, well, I mean, as you know, Molly, Solidarity is intentionally different. We are serving our members in a way that is different. You know, you still have to access the healthcare system. So we give you the tools to do that. You have a member ID card, all of that. But ultimately, when you pay your monthly contribution, you know that a majority of those funds are going to share medical needs of other members. And then we're going to be there to share your medical needs. And we are going to protect you from paying for these kind of services. And we're also going to protect you from being led to the slaughter by the medical establishment, so to speak, you know, and that's what we do every day. So, you know, you talk about the mifepristone abortion. We just had to deal with this with a member recently who had done one on her own. We didn't certainly share into that, but, you know, then had complications 30 days later, was trying to get treatment for hemorrhaging for 30 days, Molly. And, you know, we had to love her charitably and, you know, take care of her while also upholding our guidelines. And that's what we do as a healthcare ministry that's faithful to that, the Catholic teachings and the pro-life ethos that we both espouse.
Absolutely. And we will put up all the information as to how to contact Solidarity Healthshare if you're interested in, and please do, just go and do your homework. It's a wonderful organization to be part of. And as Chris says, we help each other when we join Solidarity Healthshare. Give us, again, just give us, tell us how to get hold of you, Chris, if people want to do that.
Yeah, definitely reach us at 844-313-4999. Let them know that you heard about us through Molly, by the way, because we love knowing that Molly's promoting us and our team loves listening to the podcast as well. So 844-313-4999 or visit us at solidarityhealthshare.org.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Chris Faddis. As always, God bless you lots for all that you're doing and for all of the staff there at Solidarity Healthshare. God bless you.
God bless.
Bye-bye. Don't go anywhere. I will be back with you right after this very short break with another world-class, inspiring guest.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.